Today we have part two of our series about debt in America.
What is it okay to go into debt for? A home, a car, college for your kids?
Big ticket items, maybe you're buying furniture for your house. Of course, a car, you know, you're going to go into debt for that because you need to have a car.
For the necessities, depending upon your station in life.
I think it's definitely okay to go into debt for a home.
Anna Lacey, Terry Jones, Bob Crowley, and Kyle Carruthers. Millions of Americans have been adding to their mortgages instead of paying them down, thanks in part to near-record low interest rates. And while there's news today from the Commerce Department that consumers reined in their spending slightly at the end of last year, Americans are still taking millions out of their homes and going shopping. NPR's John Itzde reports.
Last year, through cash-out refinancing and home equity lines of credit, consumers added roughly $275 billion to their mortgages. That's a huge amount of money, the equivalent of 3% of the nation's GDP. And what are consumers getting for adding more than $250 billion to their mortgage indebtedness? Economist Mark Zandi of Economy.com says people are doing a variety of things with the money.
Some homeowners are using the money to repay other higher-cost debt, credit card debt or auto loans or personal loans that have a higher interest rate attached to them. Some homeowners are using the money for home improvement. They're taking the money and then remodeling a kitchen or building a pool or many other things. And then some homeowners are just using it to finance all kinds of other spending.
The biggest percentage, though, about 40%, use the money for home improvement.
Well, this is the dining room, and there used to be a wall right here till here.
Patty Shear and her husband, who live in Washington, D.C., are redoing a kitchen, dining room, and bedroom with money they borrowed through a cash-out refinancing.
Since we moved in, the house has appreciated a lot, so it was worth more, so we could get a much bigger mortgage. And with the lower finance rates, we have a lower mortgage payment, and we were able to take out a significant amount of money. We do owe a larger mortgage, though, of course.
Yeah. Does that make you nervous at all?
Yeah, my husband, he's an economist, and he likes running the numbers and things like that, and he keeps assuring me that it's a safe bet, and I agree with him.
Falling interest rates and rising home values have created a deal too good for millions of Americans to resist, and the banking industry continues to come up with products that help consumers take equity out of their homes. Wells Fargo Home Mortgage launched one at the end of last year. As company vice president Doreen Wu Ho explains, it allows consumers to refinance their homes and originate an equity line of credit at the same time.
And this part really got the consumers interested when we told them that we would be able to tell them what the value of their home was on once a year. And if the value of that home on an index basis had increased, they would be able to increase their line of credit. And that really was a big win with them, because it was not only would they get valuable information about the home, but they also felt that they never had to reapply for a line of credit, because the line of credit would grow with them as the value of their home increased.
The equity line can be accessed in the traditional ways through checks or electronic transfers. Plus, Wells Fargo offers even more convenient access with a credit card.
For instance, we know the customers use their lines very frequently for home improvement, and by being able to use this credit card, they would automatically have a record of all their improvements, which when it comes to tax time is sometimes a nice way to have all of those expenses summarized in one place.
A lot of other lenders are attaching plastic to equity lines, and the practice worries Steve Brobeck of the Consumer Federation of America. He argues you can make it too easy for consumers to access their home equity, which represents the most important source of wealth for most Americans.
Particularly if a consumer has access to their entire home equity through the use of a debit card, they could just spend that home equity far too rapidly and then have a difficult time building that up and even paying off the second mortgage and the first mortgage before they retire, which is very important for most households to do.
A recent study by Fannie Mae, the company that purchases mortgages from lenders, confirms that tapping large amounts of home equity significantly increases financial risks for homeowners. Thomas Lund is a senior vice president at Fannie Mae.
We've noticed that consumers who take a greater percentage of cash out over the original loan balance tend to have a higher default rate.
Mm-hmm. And how much higher?
Just to give you one example, If a borrower were to take 20% out over the original balance as compared to another borrower who took 3%, that's about three times more likely to default.
Fannie Mae has raised the costs it charges on large cash-out mortgages. It's a small fee to the borrower, just a few dollars a month, but it insulates Fannie Mae from potential losses. Currently, about one in 100 homeowners loses his or her home through foreclosure. That may not sound like much, but the rate of foreclosures has doubled in the past 20 years. A big drop in home prices could put even more pressure on homeowners, especially those who've boosted their mortgages by cashing out equity. Most analysts currently think a sharp decline in home prices is unlikely on a national scale, but they don't rule it out, especially in some markets like Boston and the San Francisco Bay Area, localities which have seen huge price spikes in the past few years. John Idsty, NPR News, Washington.
I'm Mark Shaver. Don't really have a lot of debts, actually. Don't own any credit cards. Family members got in trouble with credit cards. My father would charge things such as the mortgage on credit cards. And I think one of the reasons why my parents got a divorce was because of the debt. It's gotten to about the $40,000 range. So, you know, I guess debt can break a family apart. I guess it can do a person in.
Credit cards, second, even third mortgages. There are more and more ways for Americans to borrow money these days. And while the tools for borrowing may be new, debt is not. It's been part of our culture from the very beginning.
Joining us now to talk about the history of credit and debt in America is Robert Manning. He's author of Credit Card Nation and a professor of humanities at Rochester Institute of Technology. Professor Manning, Americans were borrowing well before credit cards were around. What kinds of debt were people taking on back when the country was, for the most part, an agricultural society?
Well, keep in mind, in kind of the agricultural rhythms of the planting season and the harvest seasons, Americans who were relying on agriculture to survive had to have credit until they could actually sell their crops and start planning for the next year. So clearly for agricultural 19th century Americans who might have been borrowing money from an itinerant merchant or their local seed shop, they had to have credit to survive for the next year.
This was a very personal kind of credit, I would think, however.
Well, what's striking as we look at the history of credit in America is that the merchant would always lend credit to somebody they knew, and there was a personal relationship so that if that person didn't pay, there would be pressure on that family and his members to make sure that that debt would be made good.
As the country became more urban, more industrial, how did debt and credit begin to change and attitudes toward it?
Well, as we get into the industrialized world, workers were suddenly now subject to the changing economic conditions of the business cycle. So somebody who was employed, who might have been dependent upon the company during an illness, those people would have to borrow from the local store, which often was the company store. And as long as that family was indebted to that company or to that merchant, they couldn't leave. And this was very important strategy for maintaining a stable workforce for industrial America.
Now, as the country moved into the 20th century, credit became much more accessible to virtually everybody, and perhaps it didn't have quite the same consequences if you went into debt and didn't pay them off right away?
Well, as we look at the early emergence of the rising power and standard of living of America in the early 20th century, what was now a good debt, that is, what was socially acceptable, included purchasing things besides getting in debt for a home. And this is where we begin to see the changes as merchants were offering more and more credit to the American middle class and working classes. We saw accumulated levels of debt increase in the 20s. And it didn't become perceived as a problem, of course, until the Great Depression.
When did the credit card really come on the scene, and when did the use become so widespread?
Well, Sears was the largest credit card in the 50s and 60s, and what's very important is after World War II, we not only have a sharp increase in the standard of living of Americans, after World War II, we saw a tremendous growth in the emergence of suburbia, and this meant that local merchants didn't know their clients. And this then led from the rise of local corporate retail chains, eventually then to regional credit cards, the Bank AmeriCard, which was offering credit from a bank. That then becomes the real revolution with the credit cards in the 1970s.
And I guess something that seems to stand out about the way our society uses and views credit right now is how easy it is to get credit. When did it become so easy?
Well, one of the key features of bank credit cards and their marketing today is 1980 is the watershed of banking deregulation. It really became virtually a gold rush among the major banks now, who saw that consumers were willing to pay a substantial increase in the real cost of credit on their credit cards. And so the best customer for the bank goes from being an installment borrower who's going to accumulate an asset and pay it off in a fixed period of time, to today the best client for a bank is someone who will never repay their loan because they'll be willing to pay over 20% interest.
Thanks very much, Professor Manning.
Well, it's been a pleasure to join you today.
Robert Manning is the author of Credit Card Nation and a professor of humanities at Rochester Institute of Technology.
What do I think about credit cards? I think everyone in the society has kind of gone crazy with plastic.
I only use them if I have to use them, basically. I'd rather pay with cash.
If I take them with me, I know I'm going to use them.
A credit card is just a trap. It's a money trap.
Please, if some researcher at some big drug company is looking for a guinea pig to test a credit card patch, here I am.
Commentator Michael Ivey.
A friend of mine says that she's swearing off cigarettes this year and says she's wearing the patch. My friend is Canadian. She's got the patch and the Canadian government on her side. In Canada, they don't just have a Surgeon General's warning on the cigarette pack. They have disturbing photos of diseased lungs and things like that, which gives me an idea. Why not put pictures of people like me on credit cards as a warning? See me at the checkbook, just barely paying my monthly minimums. See me trying to block the door when the repo man comes around. Maybe it's just a shot of my starving pug with a caption like, "Take a long look into the bulging brown eyes of bad credit." The truth is, even seeing disturbing photos of myself on my credit cards would not stop me from spending a dime. That is, until they come out with a patch. Then I'll be able to get a hold of my spending problem with no problem. Just like all the smokers out there who easily quit thanks to the patch.
Commentator Michael Ivey, who comes to us courtesy Circa Music in Dublin, Ohio.